on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard another episode of The Big Fish, heading south of the border, down Victoria way this episode, with Victorian Fisheries Authority CEO Travis Dowling. Some great news for native fish numbers in the Murray and on the Victorian side. Stinker's back. You may remember him crowing about his bazooka last week. Well, it's gone kaboom! Exploded in his hands while fishing offshore. All coming up. We'll also get an update on the giant denizens of the deep that have been washed up on our shores in the big seas. On The Big Fish. Big things happening in recreational fishing in Victoria, and we've got so many listeners along the border, down on the south coast and right through the Riverina and along the Murray. And Travis Dowling is the boss of recreational fishing and joins us on the line. Good morning, Trav.
Good morning. Wonderful to join and to speak with you about fishing today.
Travis, you've had a very simple cornerstone in Victoria. Sustainability is the bottom line. How are you rejigging your fisheries to make sure that we have something there in the future for all to catch and share?
Thanks, Scott. Look, it's just a fantastic collaboration. Shout out to all the New South Wales fishers out there and also all the Victorian fishers listening. What we've got is we've got this amazing collaboration between fisheries and the fishers. And, you know, it's a great reflection on fishers that they are the biggest advocates for habitat restoration, for good size and bag limits, for slot limits, for making sure that we have better fisheries tomorrow than we've got today. And I know all that sounds very jargony, but I grew up in northeast Victoria, and I can tell you now that the cod fishing, the yellow belly fishing, the trout fishing in our waters now is much better than it was in the 70s and the 80s when I was growing up there. And that has to do a lot with good regulation, great stocking, and really, really good collaboration with fishers.
We've had many interviews on this program about the National Carp Eradication Project, which is a federal project. What benefits could flow from that if they get it right? The science has certainly been exhaustive on that biological control, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And we're really strong supporters of the carp virus, the National Carp Control Plan. It's just such great opportunities. And I think we really need to seize on this opportunity with the carp virus. And what we know about that carp virus, the herpes virus, is it is endemic in Europe, it is in Asia, it is around the rest of the world. It hasn't led to other species being impacted. What it could provide for Australia is that it could provide a reduction of carp in our waterways. They'll never be gone entirely, and that's what we've seen around the world. And then what we'll see is we'll see a re-emergence of a lot of these small-bodied natives in waterways that can't support them now because the carp are too thick and the carp are doing so much damage to those waterways. But we'll have smelt, galaxids, gudgeons starting to reappear in many of our rivers. And I know there's a lot of fishers out there going, gee, you know, I'm worried we've got our best cod fishing we've had in years and our best yellow belly fishing and our best bass fishing. If you get rid of the carp, that'll get rid of their food source. But no, what getting rid of the carp will do, or reducing their numbers, will mean that we will have a absolute explosion in these native small-bodied fish that used to be the food source for many of these other fish. And I think that's a great opportunity. I really think we need to get all fishers behind getting the carp virus out there, removing as many carp as we can, and seeing that continued recovery of our waterways.
Some great examples in Victoria of working with the scientists, of getting the evidence base and then working on that and getting the recreational fishers on side, groups like Ausfish Unlimited and all of those different recreational fishing groups. You've been really kicking some goals, haven't you, with that sort of philosophy? Tell us about some of the big wins you've had for recreational fishing over the years that you've been in charge there.
Look, it's been a wonderful collaboration with people like Craig Copeland from New South Wales with Ausfish, who set up that chapter. And then we've got the VR Fish, the Peak Recreational Fishing Body in Victoria, Future Fish. Then we've got other groups like the Australian Trout Foundation, led by a bloke by the name of Terry George, who's a really lovely guy, and then Native Fish Australia. But the collaboration has led to us being able to bring in things like the dusky flathead slot limit across the lakes, the Gippsland Lakes, so that you now can take a flathead between 30 to 55, but you leave the big girls in there to breed. And that's wonderful. Then we've got the cod slot limit. We've seen spot limits on black bream in the Gippsland Lake that are now net free as we move towards the recovery of those. We've got this joint collaboration now between native fishers and trout fishers about recovery of Macquarie perch, which is just brilliant. You know, everyone working together to try and see this iconic large body native fish be returned to our cold water rivers and our clear water rivers. So, you know, there's a federal change in the whole way that the fishing is approached in Victoria, and it's a very collaborative, it's a very supportive approach. And you know, we're out there. Part of our legislation, Scott, in Victoria is we're not just a regulator. It's in our legislation that we are, as an independent fisheries authority, we are required to grow and improve and support not just recreational fishing, but the value of commercial fishing, and that's what we're doing across the state.
Yeah, we'll talk about commercial fishing in just a moment because some fabulous initiatives down along that beautiful tourist track, the Great Ocean Road, which are really bearing dividends for everyone. But getting back to the Gippsland Lakes, how is that going as a recreational fishing haven? I believe that is the plan, or is it already gazetted as a recreational fishing haven?
It already is. And so the Gippsland Lakes now follow Mallacoota, Bem River, Tamboon, Wigan Inlet and Lake Tyres as recreational fishing only havens. And so we bought out about 2 years ago the last remaining 10 commercial fishing licences that were netting in the Gippsland Lakes. And it would be nothing short of extraordinary to consider what's happened in that time. So for the first time in 20 years or 30 years, we're seeing massive catches by the recreational sector of King George Whiting in that system, which is haven't been seen, you know, in 30 years. We're seeing the recovery of black bream, large-scale breeding and recruitment, and we're stocking dusky flathead into the lakes, and we can do that now because we know that they're not going to be netted and taken away to market. So we've got the Gippsland Lakes, but quite sadly, people drove past for a long time because the fishing there had diminished so much. It's bounced back extraordinarily in the last 2 years, and you know, it really is just a classic example of where you need to change some of the management arrangements, and then the sky's the limit, and that's what we're seeing now.
And a few pros of scraping a living, you know, doing things that in some instances have been quite unsustainable, to tens and tens of millions of dollars flowing into those communities through tourism. Is that a sum, or they sums that you've been doing before making this decision?
Yeah, well, it's important that you sort of work through how you can best assist people transition out of the fishery. So we provide some really generous compensation packages for the commercial fishers moving out. And so some of them were quite appreciative and happy to receive that. Obviously, some wanted to continue fishing, but the government made the decision that these places, the Gippsland Lakes, would be a recreational fishing haven. But at the same time that we're transitioning some of those places out of, large-scale netting for, you know, commercial fisheries, we're developing new line caught fisheries offshore, and we're developing other fisheries like squid, octopus fisheries, pippy fisheries, sea urchin. There's all of these other different types of fisheries that are coming on board. And we have in Victoria still a complete abundance of seafood. So I'll give you an example. There's 59,000 tonnes of seafood consumed in Victoria each year. There's about 100 tonnes coming out of the Gippsland Lake. So it's a drop in the ocean in terms of the availability of seafood. However, in terms of the recreational benefit to the Gippsland region, tourism, jobs, and people's ability to get out there and catch a fish and have a good time, it's a massive difference.
The money is huge, isn't it? I know the Northern Territory led the way in doing the research on what a recreational line caught barramundi was worth to their economy compared to one, thrown into the hold of the fishing boat and sent to the markets. It was just a no-brainer to look after the recreational fishing side of things for the prosperity of the community. It's the Big Fish, and we're speaking with Travis Dowling, CEO of the VFA, Victorian Fisheries. And you may have heard on the program Dr. David Kirkpatrick talking about his dad, Slim Dusty, who had his arm pulled out of the socket by a big dusky flathead on the Gippsland Lakes when we were talking about Slim's love of fishing down there. So that story is going to be repeated by the sound of it, the Flathead will bounce back. Are you getting evidence that they already are starting to, and the fact that we're now looking after those big breeding females, you've got that slot limit there?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just anecdotal evidence. It's actually supported by data. What we're seeing now, regular daily catch returns of large flathead, really between that 70 to 90 centimetre bracket, which, basically, if you're going out there targeting flathead on the lake tides, you are getting these large flathead. And people don't mind throwing them back. They enjoy the fight. Often they're catching them on 6 to 10 pound line or even lighter, and they're getting them on plastics or vibes, or, some people are, they're dangling a prawn over a pilchard. They're catching their fish and taking them around the boat 10 times and, getting a great spot on returning them. And at the same time, they're still getting their 3 to 4 in that sort of 30 to 55 centimetre slot that they can take home for the plate. So they get the trophy photo with the large fish, and they still get the good feed going back. And all of those fish under 55 are large females, and we are seeing incredible breeding that's occurring now in Lake Tyres. And we're in the middle of our best 30 in 30 years prawn event that's occurring in Lake Tyres, where we've got people travelling from all over Victoria from Lake Tyres to go prawning right in the car park in front of the pub there. You can put a torch on the water, and it's teeming with large prawns, Eastern King prawns. So it's that wonderful system.
Yeah, because we had fishery scientist Matt Taylor stocking some of the South Coast estuaries, Wallagoot and other places, with those, and people were getting 4 kilos, 8 kilos, of prawns in a dip net. So that's a very, very good thing to do as well. And of course, the fish eat them. Sadly, there were some stories when the mesh nets were in of people netting the inflowing streams and whatnot into the Gippsland lakes and taking huge hauls of estuary perch and brim, so many so that sometimes they were just thrown in the bush to rot, and it was just something that happened, and it was part of that whole system that was quite broken. As we've seen at Mallacoota, you now can spot with Polaroids across the sand flats there schools of giant black brim that are very old fish too, that number in the hundreds.
Yeah, and I think it's a really important point. Social license, whether you're a commercial or recreational fisher, is really important. And not valuing the fish really goes towards people's impression of how those fisheries should be managed and operated. And sadly, there were some instances where I think the social license in some of those fisheries was diminished based on some of that activity, and that contributed towards people arguing very strongly to government about what the future of those lakes should be. But you make a good point, Scott. When it comes to the overall health of these fisheries, it's a no-brainer, and I'm not the best at maths, but if you're leaving 300, 400, 500 tonne annually of fish in those waters that aren't going off to market, then what you're doing is you are creating a much better environment for those fish to breed and build up a significant biomass, and then to create those better recreational fishing opportunities. So, I'll give you another example. I mean, the Gippsland Lakes is a classic example, Mallacoota Lake Tyres. But the recovery of Murray cod in many of our waters has come about not just because of stocking, but the removal of commercial netting, gill netting that used to occur in those waters for a long, long time. And when you're gill netting out a lot of the larger breeding fish who are then competing also with carp, and there was redfin in the day, and you had no bag limits and no size limits, all of these things have changed. And I'll give you a great example. It's a bloke named Robbie Alexander in Wangaratta, so mid-Victoria for your listeners. And Robbie talks about the complaints of school kids when they go down to the Ovens River and only catch 3 to 4 cod in the evening when they're fishing off a sandbar. And Robbie says, when I grew up in the 70s and 80s, we would have done anything to see a Murray cod, and these kids are complaining they only catch 3 to 4 when they go down there now. So it's a really good story, and I think something we can be very optimistic about for the future.
We're speaking with Travis Dowling, boss of Victorian Recreational Fisheries and fisheries in general, and of course the commercial fishers really doing something wonderful down on the Great Ocean Road, which is such a tourist track. It's so great that we can get back there. Tell us about that line fishery that you've established.
Well, we've set it with cellar doors with line. We've set it with cheese and other, bigger station menu, fine foods, and those sorts of things. It's just this experience that people want to have, really, understanding the provenance of where their food's coming from and having that connection directly to it. And one of the things that we thought about as an independent authority looking after fishing in Victoria is if you look at the Victorian, and I went to any coastal town, be it Portland, Warrnambool, Port Ferry, all the way through Olo Bay, all the way through to the New South Wales border, Mallacoota, Lakes Entrance, I would expect, if I was in one of those small towns, that I could get fresh local caught seafood, because I'm in a seafood town. It's like if you're in a outback Northern Territory at a cattle station, you reckon you might be able to get a steak, right? So what we found was the fish that were being landed were leaving the towns and going directly to markets in Melbourne and Sydney and often being exported. And so people weren't getting that experience in a small coastal town of being able to eat locally caught fresh fish straight off the boat. So what we've done is we've issued about 40 permits to commercial fishers, only 2 tonnes each, that while they're soaking their lobster pots or after they've caught their abalone or something like that, that they can go and fish with lines only, but they must sell their fish directly from the boat in town, or from somewhere like Mallacoota, they've got a caravan set up at the main square in town. And so now we're finding for tourists and for locals and others, that each day they can go down to this boat or this caravan and see what's been caught, whether dependent, and some days it might be gurnet, they might get some snapper, or they might get some trevally or some salmon, but they can buy frisky mainly caught within that town. And we think that's a great experience. Rather than having to buy a Nile perch or a New Zealand hokey or, Tasmanian salmon, that they're able to buy directly in that town. And it's sustainable, it's supported by the recreational fishing, it's got a hard cap, I can only be 2 tonnes per licence holder. It's offshore, so it's not competing with the recreationals in the inlet, and it's creating that experience of seafood connectivity, and it's a wonderful thing.
It's lovely, too, to get a fair price to the producer, those commercial fishers, I should say, who go out in wild seas to check their lobster pots and then sell that lobster directly to the tourists or the locals coming through. It really cuts out that middleman and that problem we hear all the time about the supermarkets and the outlets and the wholesalers making all the money and the poor old people doing all the work are being stiffed. So it's wonderful to see. Speaking of lobsters too, I note you're back to the future to get plastic out of the ocean. Everything old is new again. Of course, the lobster pots used to be these beautiful wicker woven creations that you now only see in historical museums, but you're getting back to using stuff that won't pollute the ocean, steel and I guess the old willow traps might come back as well.
Yeah, we've got a real commitment towards that. And so the first thing we've done, because with our recreational fishers, we've gone digital only with the tag. So that we know how many tons of lobster are being caught in Victoria, you basically have an app now on your phone where you get 20 tags, and you can just submit your tag when you've caught a lobster, and that way we can keep a handle on sustainability. But also there was a bit of debris that was washing up from our lobster fishery along the shore, and some of the plastic pots when they get lost in wild seas and so forth. Now that was causing concern about the impacts it might be having on bird life and other marine life, as they wash up and are discarded. So we're working really collaboratively with the industry now, away from these plastic pots, away from any of these. I compare it to single-use plastic bags in supermarkets. It's a transition, it's a change, but people will look back in years to come and go, gee, why didn't we do that sooner? It makes sense. And I have to say, all credit to the commercial rock lobster fishermen of Victoria, because they're 100% on board, incredibly supportive, and they really care about that natural environment and their social license continuing to operate offshore.
All right, and finally, what's biting, Travis? What have you been catching? Because as the boss of recreational and commercial fishing in Victoria, you've got to get out and do field trips. It's a very important part of your job. What have you been catching?
We call it scientific research. It is a mandated part of the role. But I do love nothing more than going out fishing myself. And I've got a little kitty with a 25 horsepower motor, and my poor family get dragged all over the state. My last few trips, I did go after the prawns at Lake Tyre, went over there and had a great time on those. I headed over to Eildon. I heard that the redfin and the yellow belly were biting amongst the timber off the Goulburn River Arm. So I got into some nice reddies over there on scrub worms. I got a good yellow on a jackal. And on my next trip, I think I might venture up to New South Wales and have a go on the Edwards River up past Mullamine. And even though that's probably sacrilegious as a Victorian, it goes back to my childhood days going out there with my dad and enjoying Mullamine and that red dirt country. And I'll probably head up there
It's amazing, the Edwards. It's such great habitat. I mean, every bend of the river, every section of it just full of snags, and it looks really fishy to me. I know they've had some blackwater events and things that probably knocked the fish around, but what are you hearing about the Edwards?
Well, it went for a couple of years after that blackwater event where you really couldn't find a cod, and I'd go there with my dad fishing barty grubs, and got a couple of rods out with barty grubs, but there's a cod around, I'll take it. But the last couple of years, the last 2 years, have bounced back. So 2 days of fishing up there could be 50 cod. Nothing big, though, sort of mainly under the 50 centimetres, but, 3 to 4 cod on every snag. So there's really, really positive and promising signs for the Edwards. And for people that love cod fishing in New South Wales and Victoria, I think the next 3 to 4 years are going to be massive for that river. And as those cod will start to come through into the spot and move forward. But it is great to see that recovery from the blackwater, because it did struggle there for a couple of years post the blackwater event.
It is a nice river. It really has some great habitat for the fish. So good to hear they're coming back. Tight lines to you, Travis Dowling. Thanks for giving us an update on recreational fishing and commercial fishing in Victoria. It looks like you're really kicking goals. Appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, Scott. It's great to be on The Big Fish, and good luck to everyone.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Have you ever seen a fully grown leatherback turtle? The leatherback is the largest sea turtle. They grow to over 800 kilograms. Think of a VW beetle with fins. They're very rare and endangered, and are rarely seen close to the coast, living way out off the continental shelf. Unfortunately, three of them have washed up in the space of a few days on the central coast of New South Wales. And the experts are wondering why. Rob Olive from Australian Seabird and Turtle Rescue. Rob, an amazing coincidence on our beaches. Tell us the story.
Yes, unfortunately overnight we've had another adult leatherback turtle wash up on our shores around Shelley Beach. It was discovered early this morning, which is devastating, because it's the second large specimen in 2 days.
What's going on here? They're very, very rare, rarely sighted near the coast, way off the continental shelf usually, and to have two come ashore in 2 days, something's going on.
Yeah, it's quite, also there's something going on out there. So yesterday, the specimen from Avoca was picked up by National Parks. They did do a necropsy and they are doing some testing, so we are just waiting to hear from National Parks what the results that was. Obviously, over the next couple of days, we've got some large swells and some large waves that tends to push these animals onto the shoreline. But obviously, there's something extreme going on at the moment, because this is the second specimen in 2 days and the third within a week.
Where was the other one? So this is one near Shelley or Toowoon Bay, then the one at Avoca, and there was one a bit further north too, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was one that was discovered at Birdie Beach, which was quite badly decomposed, but that was discovered last week on Birdie Beach. So we had Birdie Beach, Avoca Beach and Toowoon Bay over the last week or so.
So few of these about, according to the experts. It's just awful, isn't it, to think that three have washed up just on the central coast alone. Do you have any clue or anything you could speculate on?
I think we'll have to wait till testing is done, but obviously, our coastline has been under extreme conditions over the last couple of weeks with flooding events, which can obviously have pollution events within the oceans. And with the leatherbacks, their main food source is jellyfish, and unfortunately a lot of our plastic bags and stuff do resemble jellyfish in the ocean. So, that could be a possibility too with excess of flooding. We could have excess debris in the water, maybe the deaths have been caused by that. But obviously, we can only speculate in the meantime, and we have to wait until the experts do their job and determine the cause of death.
All right, Rob, thanks for the update, and we'll wait till the National Parks and Wildlife Service do those tests and the necropsy and let us know what's going on, because we love these animals. It's so sad to see them washed up. They're absolutely beautiful. Thanks for your time.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Rob Olive there from Seabird and Turtle Rescue Central Coast.
Lines.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Stinky, you got some great news, some great fishing news, and a disaster tale, a story of absolute disaster. We'll start with the good news, shall we?
Well, there's plenty of good news around Port Stephens. I mean, we're all suffering the weather, and our hearts all go out to those further north who are, you know, suffering the flooding. And, oh, dear, I think of them often. Being a North Coast person myself, I'm thinking, oh, dear, oh, dear. You know, life's tough up there at the moment, that's for sure. But here in Port Stephens, of course, we don't really have, particularly on the coast, we don't have any of those issues. But our opportunities of going fishing are still very limited.
Mm. But you say that some of the regular North Coast residents are moving in.
Oh, well, as far as fish are concerned, yes, that's very true. Well, at this time of the year, because I get reports weekly over a long, long period of time, I see if there's a certain trend. I watch the trends. And what's happening at the moment is snapper, really, it is just extraordinary the amount of quality snapper that are on offer if you can get out there and get amongst them. And, of course, the weather decides that. But the beautiful, beautiful snapper, and a 3-4 kilo snapper aren't uncommon. And even like a snapper that's over a kilo and a half to 2 kilo, they're the fish that I reckon are the most beautiful table fish. And they're the ones that I really would prefer. I'm not out there to break any world records. All I'm out there for is to catch a nice couple of fish for the table. And there's heaps around, Scott. It's wonderful that there's so many fish available. But like I said, there's only that very small window of opportunity.
That's right. We're hearing that with all this nutrient coming out of the big rivers and the tragedy of the floods and what it's doing is also supercharging the marine environment up and down the coast, even though it's awful to think of what's happening in Lismore and the northern rivers and parts of the mid-north coast as well. But all of that nutrient is creating quite a fish soup out there.
Well, you know, and the temperature of the water, it's I don't quite know. I don't measure it all that much. All I can feel it is on my bare feet. But it's warm. I know that it's warm. And inside the harbour, the flathead fishing, the dusky flathead fishing hasn't been better. And they're a beautiful fish. And everyone's going to plastics. Everyone's gone plastics crazy, whether it be for snapper or for flathead. That's where the big movement is, away from sort of prehistoric people like myself to the modern day fisher that really favours the plastics. But one friend from Maitland, Nick Nancarro, he fished out wide of Broughton Island earlier in the week. And with a large plastic, I mean, it looks strange. When you put on a really big plastic and throw it over the side, you think, yeah, no fish is going to be tricked by that. Well, boom, all this almighty 25-kilo cobia took off. Well, there's a half an hour for struggling, you know. I mean, it's a battle. If you hook a kingfish or a cobia, you're in a big one, over 20 kilo. You're in for the ride of your life.
Oh, yeah. And we used to call them black kingfish. We used to all call them black kingfish, but they'll leave a yellowtail kingfish for dead in the kitchen. They're a great pelagic fish to eat, and they really fight. They're not as dirty a fighter as the yellowtail kingfish, are they?
Well, no, neither of them have teeth, so you don't have to worry too much about teeth. But they also call them sergeant fish or crab eaters. I mean, and they grow over 60 kilo. I mean, these are giant creatures. Oh, and over 2 metres long. I mean, imagine hooking onto a 2-metre, 60 kilo cobia. You'd end up in New Zealand. I mean, you might not know where you're going to end up.
Well, that story you told about the one you booked, hooked at Cabarita Headland, that you're hopping around the rocks for hours and hours on a beach rod. I mean, that was a rocks rod. That was a bit of sport. But they do look like sharks in the water too, don't you? When you first see them, you think, oh, no, I've caught a shark. And then you realise, no, hang on, it's a cobia. It's a black kingfish.
That's right. And remember last week, or the week before, I said we thought we'd caught this skinny cobia, and it was remora.
So yeah.
I checked it out whether remora, what eating qualities of remora in one of those Swainston books, you know, Fishes of Southern Australia.
Yeah.
If anyone's looking for a good book, reference book, Swainston's Fishes of Southern Australia is an excellent book, and it's one I use for all the time. So I thought I'd look up the eating qualities of remora, which look remarkably like a cobia, skinny version of a cobia, the way sucker on their head.
That's right.
But it doesn't register the edibility, the qualities of eating a remora, because I don't think anyone's been game enough to have a go.
Yeah, they're the little garbage guts of the sea, aren't they? Little garbage processes of the sea. I wonder if anyone's eaten one anyway. Drop Stinker a line. Stinkerfishing@yahoo.com, isn't it?
That's the one. Yep. There. And I get some of the greatest little stories, and I'm always interested about what you're doing. So yeah, send me a line. Oh,
and these cobia, are they moving in any numbers? Are you getting reports that they're actually really on around mid North Coast, Port Stephens, your patch?
I am. I've had this week five reports this week of different areas from different fishers saying, yeah, there's a cobia from what we call Fisherman's Bay or Boat Harbour. That's the most southerly point, like of Port Stephens down towards Stockton Beach off the reef out there, which is called Urala Reef. So there's been reports from there, and then Fingal, and then Bundelbar Island, which is halfway to Broughton, and then Broughton and further north. So they're moved right in. They're welcome, but they'll go and they take off and they only come back for a couple of months of the year, as do pearl perch. The pearlies are starting to become far more frequent as well, and they're very welcome. Oh, gee, like I said, I reckon they're beautiful eating fish, pearl perch.
Yeah, they're a beauty, aren't they? They're just a magnificent fish. I tell you what they're related to, I think, because they look a bit like them, only they're a lot bigger. You spent a bit of time in WA, the WA dew fish. I think it's DHEU. They're like a supercharged pearly, aren't they?
Yeah, the DHEU fish. Yeah. They are. And I think you're right. I think they're cousins. Although they're a long way removed, I mean, the breadth of our country, they're a long way apart, but I think somewhere in their evolvement that they would have been cousins, because they look, as you say, identical, except that the dewfish, the DHU fish from WA, has got a black stripe.
That's right, yeah. But their eating qualities are just superb.
They are. They're a beautiful feeder fish. I had cooked twice this week. I cooked fresh fish, like they weren't frozen, fresh fillets of snapper. Absolutely beautiful.
Lovely. The pearlies are usually a bit further out than where you fish, close to shore in the wash, though, aren't they?
They are, unfortunately. The pearlies don't come into the wash. And because I've only got small boat, I don't venture out onto the wide reefs. Like I say, I haven't got enough anchor rope to get me to the bottom.
but that's
just unfortunate. But, look. This is a very exciting time of the year with what's going on. The only thing that's not real, I haven't heard much about lately, is crabs. I haven't heard much about crabs. All through the summer, I didn't hear much about crabs in our system, which is a bit odd because, you know, generally that's when you expect to see muddies and blue swimmers. I don't know about any other systems. I mean, hopefully someone can contact us and tell us what crabbing's been going.
All that cold, all that cold, fresh water coming down. Whether that has an impact or not, and oftentimes I think, you know, we fish for crabs through summer and then we stop. But talking to some of the local blokes who get out a lot, sometimes they go all year. I think it just depends on water temperature and stuff like that. I know the mud crabs are more sensitive than the blue swimmers to that sort of thing. We're speaking with Stinker about fishing options, and you mentioned the great news of the cobia and the pearl perch turning up in your part of the world that we talked about the disaster of the flooding, a disaster of minor proportions compared to the flooding up north has happened to you, I believe. You were spruiking up your new technique with the giant bazooka rod, then praising up the virtue of the bazooka rod last week. I believe there's been a problem.
A problem is an understatement. My bazooka cracked, and it smashed into two. Bang! There was an almighty bang like a gunshot, and my old bazooka cracked into two. Oh, dear oh me. I think, there's some sort of a karma out there in the ocean. And once I left my old system of fishing, there's sort of always going to be something that's amiss. Well, what happened is I'm out there in front of the lighthouse and I've gone into fishing big time. I'm fishing with 30-pound line, a bazooka, which is a solid rod, very solid, and a 6-0 hook through the nose of a yellowtail. Now, that's pretty rough. When it comes to fishing, that's rough. But I found it effective. So what's happened, and this was earlier in the week, I got out on Monday and Tuesday. I got out 2 days before the bad weather set in. And this was on Monday. So out I go with all these new systems I've got in place to target the bigger fish. And I hook the bottom. And that doesn't make me happy at all. So instead of yanking your rod, which is not what you do if you hook the bottom, you peel off line until you actually grab your line and then you pull it off the bottom by pulling the line and not your rod. So that's okay. And I've gone and I've done all that and I'm pulling the line and what happens? The line starts to come up, something very heavy and mean and angry on the other end, but it wasn't hooked on the bottom. So, oh, this is okay. So I grab hold of the bazooka and start winding this creature, lifeless creature, which give a flicker every now and then, to the surface. And up it come. And I thought it was one of those useless Port Jackson sharks. You know those things? They've got no value at all. What are they good for? What's a Port Jackson shark good for?
I don't know. They have a role to play, I'm sure.
Well, I reckon a decent sort of a shark. Imagine, you say to a great white shark, you say, meet your cousin, the...
Poor Jackson.
He'd say, he's no cousin of mine. Poor Jackson shark. Oh, they don't have any teeth. They don't swim fast. They're not mean looking. They just really shouldn't even be a shark. But anyway, I thought that's what it probably was. Well, I was wrong. I went further and whined, and up come the biggest fiddler ray I have ever seen. Do you know the fiddler ray?
Yeah. They get big.
They're big, all right. This thing was, great big round thing with a sort of a camouflage colour on it. And really, it has no fighting quality. I think you could probably eat it, but that never crossed my mind.
They've sort of got a tail. They're a little bit of a hybrid between a shark and a ray, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. They call them fiddler ray or banjo. I think a banjo shark is the same thing as a fiddler ray.
Yeah, I think so. And they're a bit close to your shovel nose too, aren't they? Not quite the same shape.
Yeah, they'd be cousins to that mob too. So anyway, I've pulled this thing. Now, rather than get my line and sort of unhook it or pull it over, I decided to sort of wind a bit further. So my rod is in now in a semicircle with this great heavy thing on the other end, and bang! Oh, I nearly died of fright. And then half my rod disappears down into the water, and there I am fishing with a stump. That's all I had left. Oh,
must have been a big one. Must have been a big one.
Oh, it was huge. It was a giant of a thing. But big, useless. Oh,
and there goes the bazooka. Well, see, pride comes before a fall. You were so proud of your new technique, the big bazooka, getting rid of the old whippy side cast and using the heavy gun. And there you go. It's blown up on you.
That's exactly what happened. I must have looked a sight, really, but no one went past because no one else was out fishing. But I ended up thinking, well, I've got half a rod, so I'm going to keep fishing with half a rod. So I re-rigged with half a rod and threw out and sat there fishing for snapper with a half a rod. And I leave it in the rod holder and you wait for it to bend. Well, half a rod doesn't bend. So I had to put it on ratchet. I put it on a ratchet so I could hear if there were fish on the other end. Oh, dear, oh, dear. So I've arrived home and dear, oh, me. These are things that sort of wear you down, but that's part of fishing.
So what are you going to do? Are you going to go out to the tackle shop, which is pretty rare for you? Your gear's the same gear you've had for 40 years. I mean, are you going to buy another bazooka?
Well, what's happened is interesting because this has kind of a set of an interesting ending to, or maybe not an ending, but another chapter in the story. But the rod that I caught the huge cobia on years and years ago that I used on Cabarita Headland, I haven't pretty much used ever since. It's a rod not suitable to around here, but it can be cut off and used. My father made it. He was a professional, well, apart from his other jobs, he was a rod maker, and he made this rod. Anyway, I'm going to keep the butt because he had a specialised method of making of fixing up rod butts and his own design. So I'm keeping that, but then I'm going to shorten it and turn it into another bazooka and see what happens. And that'll be an ongoing story.
I knew you wouldn't go out and buy a new one. You've gone back to the future. How old would that be? That rod that your dad made?
Well, that was 30, 40, that'd have been 50 years ago. Yes, that's right. It was 1977 when I caught that giant cobia. So however long that was, and then the rod was pretty old then. It was original Sportex. Now, anyone who knows anything about rods, that was American, I think, and it was when fiberglass first came out. And so it was an original, it's about a 12-foot, Sportex, so that's what I'm going to use. Cut a couple of feet off it and start all over again. See what happens.
Good luck with that. Good on you, mate. You can't say that this show spruiks, all this high-tech tackle, can you?
No, look, there's still some of us out there. I mean, Rangoon cane and split cane and all the old methods of fishing, and I mean, it's a wonderful... Fishing has a fantastic history. It really does. The history of fishing and all the... We're now, as you say, in high tech, and the gear that we use now is so advanced. I mean, I was just thinking the other day, it's man versus fish, or humans versus fish, and humans have got all the... everything going for them. The fish are still the fish. But, gee, there's so much technology now mounting against the fish, it's getting easier and easier to catch a fish. Oh, dear, oh, dear. It's a real business, isn't it, on the move. Fishing is a real technology on the move.
Yeah, it's a gadget game. It's an accessory sport, if you want it to be, or you can just go back 50 years and use what your dad used. Hey, tight lines, mate. It's great to hear from you. And, you know, there's a new thing called Cuddy Hunk Line. You might be able to get some of that to put on it.
That's right. Yeah, there is.
There is stinker.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
A new fish farm is up and running in Victoria with plans to produce more than 1 million native fish a year that will be used to restock waterways around the state and up to the Murray. The main focus at the moment, Murray cod and golden perch, with plans to expand into other native species in coming years. Reporter Annie Brown went along to have a look.
That's more one. So you get a limited window of opportunity here. Right? I'm going to show you a big Murray cod. Now the problem with this Murray cod is very, very, very big, and you're not going to get much of a chance to look at it. All right.
All right. So,
literally, you get.
The Murray cod is Australia's largest freshwater fish, growing up to 1.8 metres long and weighing up to 60 kilograms. It's one of the species being grown here at the Victorian State Government's new hatchery at Arcadia, just outside Shepparton in the state's Goulburn Valley region. Hello, I'm Annie Brown, and I'm here with the director of the Native Fish Hatchery Project, Anthony Forster, who's showing me around.
We're standing in an old herringbone milking shed, previous owner of the property, and we've converted it to a fish farm. And we're looking at 16 tanks at the moment. They're about 1,000 litres each. And they'll be used to hold big Murray cod brood stock in quarantine before we put them into our brood ponds. At the other time of the year, we'll also use them for harvesting fish. So the juvenile fish, when they come out of the ponds, are kept in these tanks where they're salt treated, and then the next day they're out in the rivers.
Can you tell me a bit more about the species that you're particularly focused on here? So the Murray cod and the golden perch. The Murray cod are pretty scary looking fish when they get pretty big.
Well, we just pulled out one that was nearly a metre long and nearly drowned us, but yeah, you're right, they are impressive beasts. They really are. Our focus at Arcadia will be on Murray cod initially and golden perch. They're what we call our bread and butter species. But we will start transitioning across to silver perch and even freshwater catfish over time. But the thing I will mention is that this property is 170 hectares. It's quite sizable. At the moment, we're using about 30, maybe 40 hectares of it. We've got the potential at this farm to triple the size of production. And that would take it from 1.6 to comfortably 5 million fish a year, which would make it one of the biggest native fish farms of its kind in Australia. But you know, that's a question for government around priorities. But the opportunity is there, and we certainly bought this property with expansion in mind.
Arcadia will work alongside the state's other hatchery in Snobs Creek near Lake Eildon, which has been open since the 1950s. Victorian Fisheries Authority restocks more than 8 million fish a year at more than 200 stocking locations throughout the state. Mr. Forster says restocking is important to increase numbers of threatened native species.
The reality is our rivers have changed. Irrigation farming practices and how we dam water means that the rivers don't perform as naturally as they once were. And really that means that they don't flood as often. And flooding rivers is really critical for native fish breeding. It cues them to spawn, but it also creates high productivity so that the juvenile fish, when they hatch from the eggs, they've got food to eat. Now that cycle's been broken in most of our rivers because they're regulated. So our strategy is that yes, we will work to help improve river restoration and river health by removing barriers that we can, also putting fish habitat in, logs and snags, also improving the riparian strip. But the reality is that's a long game. And what we're doing in the interim is building native fish numbers up through stocking.
So this is just the beginning for the Arcadia hatchery, but where do you see fish farming and restocking going in the future? Is it something that we're going to have to keep doing continuously, or is there eventually going to be a phase where we phase it out?
It's a really good question. What we know is that our rivers have changed, and while they will improve, they're unlikely to come back to natural condition in most cases. So we think there's an ongoing role for fish stocking. But the other side of it is if we can build native fish numbers up to good, you know, really good healthy populations, when it does eventually flood, we'll get those fish to breed naturally. So I guess what we're doing is supplementing the opportunity for native fish recovery. Fish stocking is a big part of that, but we don't have to stock fish in rivers where they are natural. And the great example is the Ovens River. We haven't stocked the Ovens River with native fish for about 20 years, apart from some Macquarie perch, which is a different aspect again. But the Murray cod population in the Ovens River is exceptional and doesn't need stocking because it's natural, unregulated. So our rivers at the moment run in reverse cycle. What I mean by that is rather than being high in winter and low in summer, they flip that around because of irrigation demand. So if there's one thing I could change, it would be to better manage the waterways so that we can restore and turn back the clock, if you like, and recover more natural flows. You know, so we have low flows in summer and high flows in winter. And at the moment, it's completely reversed.
Do you see it likely for something like that to change?
It's a challenge. It really is, because our rivers are also highly valued for irrigation, and the irrigation sector is only growing.
Anthony Forster there from Victoria Fisheries Authority speaking to Annie Brown, those Victorians trying to lure us south of the border. Tight lines. We'll catch you next week on The Big Fish.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.